This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG for Friday, March 6th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, we'll get a preview of this year's Iditarod race from our reporter on the trail. We'll also take a look behind the scenes of this year's regional basketball tournament happening right now in Dillingham. Two local artists caught our attention this week, and we'll hear from them. Plus, some young folks in Naknek are reviving an annual magazine that has a decades-old tradition in Bristol Bay. Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. State troopers have suspended the search now for Henry Williams of Platinum. The 74-year-old has been missing since last Friday. He had made a grocery run to Good News Bay on an ATV and left back for Platinum Friday afternoon and has not been seen since. Volunteers searched by ground on Saturday and state troopers by air on Sunday. Troopers say they have no clue to his whereabouts yet. They're halting the search on account of ice instability and hazardous weather. The House Finance Committee has been hearing testimony from residents around the state this week on proposed cuts to popular programs. At the Dillingham LIO, Robin Cheney spoke up to keep funding for programs like the Imagination Library, which puts books in the hands of area children.
And so if half our funding was cut, we would either have to stop supporting our rural sites, we would have to limit our enrollment. I don't know how we would do that, or we would just, our program would die.
Others in Bristol Bay testified on the need to continue funding for legal services, broadband support for area schools, and public broadcasting. The Senate Finance Committee has been gathering expert input on several bills relating to the legalization of marijuana. On Thursday, Senator Mike Dunleavy asked Deputy Attorney General Rick Svobodny if state prosecutors couldn't use more discretion in charging people with marijuana-related crimes. Dunleavy said that's what the feds are doing, and he suggested it would be smart in tough fiscal times. Svobodny answered back that prosecutors are already doing that.
You know, the people voted for this initiative in part because of all the people who were in jail for possessing marijuana. The answer to that, the number of people in jail. I don't know today, but I had Ms. Schroeder check a while back for just possessing marijuana was zero. So that tells me that prosecutors are using their discretion.
The Senate has three bills related to marijuana, one dealing with crimes pertaining to its use, one to a proposed board similar to alcohol in the state, and a third to regulate its commercial sale. The winter moose hunting season closed last weekend in Area 17A, which was offered an extension through federal and state authorities this winter.
We ended up getting 9 of the 10 cows we were going to allow, and 4 bulls, I think, were taken as well. So we ended up with 13 moose.
That's Neil Barton at Fish and Game. He says that's above average. The 10-year average in 17A for the winter hunt has been about 10 moose taken over the past 10 years. Reed Tennyson, a 2011 Dillingham High School grad, is at the NAIA National Wrestling Tournament this weekend in Topeka, Kansas. Tennyson wrestles for the University of Southern Oregon. This morning he lost a match to the number 2 seed from Grandview, Washington. His dad, Rick, says it was a close match.
He had to move the pin, but it didn't. He ran out of time. And then he gets a bye on the consolation side and then has to win 2 matches there to get All-American status.
Find more on this week's stories at our website, kdlg.org. Tomorrow, the last great race on Earth has its ceremonial start in Anchorage. Rookie Canadian musher Rob Cook gets to lead out of the gate tomorrow. The race restarts in Fairbanks Monday, and APRN will have a reporter following along and offering up-to-the-minute coverage. Emily Schwing is a veteran sled dog race reporter with 3 Iditarods and 5 Yukon Quests now under her belt. She joins me from Fairbanks for a preview. Emily, thank you so much for taking the call.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I guess the big story, at least the big story so far, is that the route changed substantially based on the weather this year. What about this new route have you heard?
They're still having a ceremonial start down in Anchorage, but the new route will go from Fairbanks to Nome. And what's really interesting to me about this new route is that it's actually more historically accurate because, you know, the Iditarod was created to commemorate a run that mushers made in 1925 to deliver serum to Nome during a pretty serious diphtheria outbreak. Basically what happened is they shipped the serum for the diphtheria to Seward, put it on the train, shipped it on the train from Seward up to Nenana, and then with dog teams traveled from Nenana to Nome to deliver it. And so this route will go from here in Fairbanks out to Nenana as the first checkpoint. And then it'll cross the Tanana Flats and go up to Manly. And from there, it will travel on most of the route from Manly will be along the northern route, which is normally the northern route. The other cool thing is, you know, they haven't run this route since 2003, the last time they had to reroute the race start. And I think a lot of mushers are actually really excited to get to travel a new course.
And that's what I was going to ask, is that I really haven't heard any complaints about it. In fact, it seems like most of the mushers praised the call to do this, even though it's a little bit shorter, I gather, but seems safer and it seems better for this year.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. You know, I think everybody's really excited to see what happens. This race has now kind of been like equalized for everybody because everyone's sort of a rookie with the new route. The other thing is that last year's Iditarod is very likely to go down as the toughest race in Iditarod history. I mean, even like some of the older, most diehard fans and old-time mushers will tell you that last year's race was really tough. Just it was snow-free in the beginning, and then going through the Alaska Range was really dramatic, and there was a lot of pretty serious injury to both mushers and sleds in the farewell burn. And then when they got out on the coast, you know, it was snow-free again from Caltech to Unalakleet, and then this huge ground blizzard came up and took out a lot of teams within 30 miles of the finish line. So I think a lot of mushers are just hoping for a bit of a respite this year from what they experienced last year.
Well, there's some indication that that may not happen. The National Weather Service says we're going to get kind of slammed with a little Arctic blast and maybe some big snow. What do you know about the weather, and what are the teams kind of thinking about this little change in the weather?
Yeah, the weather. So it's supposed to get cold in the interior, which, you know, for those of us who live here, is supposed to be normal, although it's been pretty warm. So I think everybody's really complaining about that. The other thing is that, you know, yeah, there's supposed to be snow, and the problem with the snow is because there's not much of a base, you know, and it might not stick around. If things get windy, then it's just going to be blowing all around and create a visibility issue. Weather's weather. There was a very dramatic start to this year's Yukon Quest, and all the mushers there were just like, you know, we're mushers, and this is what we deal with. So what I do think is sort of ironic in some ways is that a lot of the mushers who did not finish the Yukon Quest this year scratched because of really cold sub-zero temperatures, and it looks like they may actually face that again in this year's Iditarod.
Interesting. Speaking of the mushers, I hear it's a competitive field. Do you agree with that, and do you have any favorites?
Well, I'm an objective reporter, so I'm not going to give you my favorites. So we'll just say I don't have any. But, yeah, there's five returning champions. So we've got Jeff King, Lance Mackey, Martin Boozer, Dallas Seavey, and Mitch Seavey, and John Baker, actually. So I think that's actually six returning champions, if I count again. And then there's a bunch of favorites who fans love and are really pulling for. So, you know, Brent Sass is coming off this incredible win on the Yukon Quest with a really fast dog team who was able to maintain their speed for, you know, all the way to the finish line this year. And then we've got second place finisher Alan Moore. That dog team that he ran in the Yukon Quest is actually going to be running in front of his wife, Allie Zirkel. Now, Allie Zirkel has been trying to win this race for years. She's placed second behind either Mitch or Dallas Seavey the last 3 years in a row, so she's very hungry for a win. You know, we've got Pete Kaiser, who is coming from Western Alaska, and he had an incredible win in the Cusco 300 this year. So 2 years ago, I had Jake Berkowitz tell me, you know, this is an incredible field. There are 15 teams vying for a top 10 finish, and ever since then, I have not seen things change in the Iditarod field. This is just the place to be if you're a highly competitive musher.
It sounds like it's going to be another good year, and we're excited to hear your coverage. I hope you stay warm and enjoy this year's race. I guess we'll hear from you starting Monday.
Yeah, starting Monday. So the race starts here at 11 a.m. in Fairbanks, and then we'll be moving on down the trail towards Nome for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, terrific. Emily Schwing, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Some of you get the Aaron Copland reference. This is Bristol Band Beyond on KDLG. Well, the regional basketball tournament is in full swing here in downtown Dillingham. Tonight, the Lady Wolverines square off against the Lady Angels for top honors. And in the boys' brackets, it's Unalaska versus Dillingham. KDLG will have live coverage, but there's more going on than just the games this weekend. We sent our reporter Matt Martin around to have a look behind the scenes.
Long before the first toss-up, there is an entire world of volunteers and head-spinning logistics at the tournament. Seven teams have flown into Dillingham to test their mettle on the court, and that requires a lot of planning. The regional tournament only comes to Dillingham once every 4 years, so the community likes to go big. Players travel in from outlying villages, lodging, and of course the big one, food.
Can you go to the office and then the preacher's tomorrow?
Brianna Boydell, assistant Dillingham girls coach, isn't afraid to get her hands messy preparing a meal Thursday afternoon.
I am cleaning a turkey for lunch or for dinner tonight for the high school basketball teams.
That's only one of five turkeys cooked. Also mashed potatoes, fresh salad, and in the morning, biscuits and gravy. There will be no shortage of food for the students this weekend.
Home-cooked meals are the best on trips, and so we try to cook as much as we could for these kids.
Boydell says the school's kitchen could prepare meals for the students, but really, who wants to eat school food?
We have awesome cooks in the kitchen. Food's better. It's just nice to show that we're welcoming them into our community with the food, I feel like.
Parents, coaches, and community members donate all the meals for about 150 players over the three-day event. The head coach for Dillingham girls team, Carl Clark, has spent the last 3 weeks planning the logistics of this weekend. He says it's a lot of stuff to put together for one weekend of basketball.
You think you have everything planned out and it's going to run smoothly, and then there's a little glitch that'll happen in there somewhere, and it's just like, oh my God. Then you get overwhelmed with a lot of stuff that you're actually doing, And it could get pretty frustrating at some points, but you just kind of put that behind you and think you're here for the kids. Anyway, let's just get it done and have some fun this weekend.
Visiting students sleep in the school. The middle school gym is filled with suitcases, air mattresses, and table for food and games. Marina Olson, an 11th grader from Unalaska, says she loves going on these trips. She gets to eat junk food and hang out with her friends on the team. And then maybe get around to some homework.
The Unalaska Raiders love to study. We're always doing homework. Not by force, we volunteer. Psych.
She says sometimes they even get outside to stretch their legs.
Oh, we walk. Walk to the store, get more food, then eat that.
Whether it's food or basketball or both, everyone is looking to enjoy this weekend's tournament. Behind the curtains of these games is a community of people working together, all for the love of basketball. Now, on to state. In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for staying with us. Now to this. A group of NACNEC students are reviving a local publication to record Bristol Bay's history. Hannah Colton brings us the story.
In the mid-1970s, a group of Bristol Bay High School students began a unique publication to preserve the history, culture, and traditions of the NACNEC area. They called it Utugtwa. I caught up with one woman who worked on the Utugtwa in NACNEC as a teenager.
I'm Carol Ann Hester, traveler, fisherman, wild woman.
Carol Ann Hester was in the first group of students to publish the Utugtwa magazine.
Our journalism class started it with Kurt Janing and Suzanne Talbert. And it was started as a historical record of the people and the places in our community. And I interviewed the, perhaps at that time, eldest lady in our community, Mrs. Martha Munson. And I really enjoyed my visit with her. She taught me a lot about the community and about the wisdom of the ages.
I spoke with three students who are working now to bring back the Utugtwa after a 20-year hiatus.
My name's Tia Thompson. There's two ways that we know of to pronounce it.
I'm going
to
say it wrong. Utugtwa.
We've stuck with Utugtwa. In Yupik, it means I'm coming home or I'm going home.
I'm Ruth Nishikfas. I think we really just wanted to bring it back to get the community involved with our education system.
I'm just nervous to conduct some interviews. I don't know, I've never done it before.
That was Ruth Nashukbuk, Tia Thompson, and Noah Smith. They're all juniors at Bristol Bay High, and the Utugtwa will be their first experience in journalism.
We each get to interview two community members.
Elders that have lived here a long time and know a lot.
Someone else who's been out here for as long as I can remember that's been fishing.
People from the base, so we can have a history of the base and how that was set up.
What kinds of things are you most excited to write about?
Probably the history of the school.
The origin of the telephone company. They were talking about the first telephone line, and it was just a single line that ran from NACNEC to King Salmon, and it was response. They made it in response from war threats during World War II.
Their teacher, Amanda Lemer, is spearheading the Utugtwa's comeback.
My name is Amanda Lemer. I am the social studies teacher.
She says a colleague suggested the idea to her as a way for students to fulfill requirements for the statewide Alaska history class.
I love the idea right off the bat. Generally, the students in the past had been required to write like a 10-page paper on research about the state. So instead, I decided that recreating the Utugtwa would be a much more exciting way.
I guess as a teacher and sort of spearheading this project, what's like your highest goal for what this could be?
I would love for it to be a long-term thing. There are so many amazing stories and tales and traditions in this area, and so it's important to preserve those while we do have the elders.
Here's Carol Ann Hester again. She says the experience of writing the Utugtwa opened her eyes to the interactions of her community.
To being a part of one instead of just living in one. I think the class grew me up a lot. Do you know what I mean when I say grew me up? I had trouble with communicating with people. And being in that class taught me through writing things down and thinking them out, using some forethought before I spoke, to be a better communicator.
And what would be your message to students who are in it now about how to approach the experience?
To take what's in your heart about your community and put it into words by talking to people in your community who care about it as much as you do. And that's NACNEC and King Salmon and South NACNEC. And if they just bring that to life with their words, they'll be doing great.
In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Next, we're going to introduce you to two local artists whose work has come to our attention in the past week. Hundreds of you have been using our web link with the Basketball Regionals Tournament, and maybe hundreds more will buy t-shirts at the games this weekend. You'll notice an original new logo featuring the mascots of the five teams in the tournament: the Bristol Bay Angels, Togiak Huskies, Dillingham Wolverines, Unalaska Raiders, and the Mustangs from the Kuskokwim Learning Academy. This very cool logo was designed at the very last possible minute by a talented Dillingham High School student. She stopped by our studios this week to talk about it.
My name is Juliana Nicholson, and I'm a senior this year.
Nicholson says she has enjoyed art as a hobby for at least as far back as she can remember.
When I was in kindergarten, I'd always draw and do projects that we were doing, and people would brag about my art, and I'd just be really flattered and kind of encouraged me to do more art.
These days, she says she enjoys doing more drawing digitally using a tablet and programs like Photoshop.
I like the clean look of the finished piece when I'm done with it. Because if I'm drawing with color pencil, it's really easy to mess up. You can't undo mistakes that you do unless you do everything pencil first. But when you do it digitally, it's really easy to undo.
How many artists, writers, reporters have stared at the blank canvas page or screen waiting for that moment of inspiration to get started? Nicholson says she usually knows what she wants to draw, but the inspiration to start on it comes tougher. Like with this logo, the opportunity came up through Mr. Villeneuve's art class weeks ago, but it didn't initially offer much appeal. She focused on other things for a while.
So my friend was doing it right next to me, and I was just watching her do it, and I got more interested that way. And I was all maybe I should do it myself, but this time with drawing, because people are just using the original logos.
So she started on the logo a bit late, and the deadline neared. In fact, she was running out of time to finish so that signs could be printed and the t-shirt design prepped. It wasn't an easy finish.
No, it wasn't, because they are really strict with the computer lab.
Nicholson ended up essentially locked out of the computer lab she needed to access to finish it. The sub that week couldn't allow her to come in unsupervised.
I was almost done with it, but I only needed at least an hour more to finish coloring it and everything. But the problem was I wasn't able to get in the computer lab because nobody was there to watch me.
This prompted a moment of, shall we say, teenage angst, and let's leave it at that. Nicholson's pleas softened the heart of Principal Bill Schwann, who made a rare exception to let this budding artist bear down and finish the logo.
He let me stay in there lunchtime a few days ago till the end of the day and after school to finish it, and I got it done with that time. And I'm really thankful for that time, because if I didn't get that time, I probably would have never gotten this done, and I'd probably just have to put it to waste and put it aside and no one will ever use it. So yeah, I'm really glad it's done.
Done at last, Mr. Villeneuve put the logo proudly in the gym, profitably on the many t-shirts, and prudently on the KDLG website. So are you proud of this achievement?
Yeah, that's the main reason why I did it, because I wanted my art to be on t-shirts for people to have and keep and know my name and everything.
Juliana Nicholson, a Dillingham High School senior, whose art you'll find at the regional basketball tournament and on our website. Now to another artist whose work appears weekly on KDLG.org. Through the lens of his Canon SLR digital camera, Clark Fair has been capturing the sights and scenes of Dillingham and the surrounding area with a noticeable aptitude. To verify that, check out his many images of winter hikes on Snake Mountain, most recently some excellent photo coverage of Beaver Roundup, and other great shots from ordinary objects and locations around town like the city dock or anywhere he finds a boat slowly dying. His photos have appeared on phone books, the front page of the Bristol Bay Times, the Trading Post, and frequently at our website. Not to shortchange other great area photographers like Joanne Knight, Abayu Moore, Kevin Tennyson, and Eric Hansen, who share photos with us. But Clark was handy and happens to be teaching a class on digital photography this weekend at the campus, so we asked if he'd stop by and share a few thoughts on how we can all better our own photographic efforts. He joins me now. Clark, our occasional essayist and volunteer photographer, thanks for coming by.
I'm glad to be here, Dave.
Well, people have seen your photography in a lot of places lately, and I just thought it might be interesting to talk a little bit about some of the general things that you're doing right that others of us might mimic and get a few better results out of our photography. What jumps out to you that you've learned to do over the years that maybe people slightly more amateur than yourself could improve on?
I think everyone can benefit from learning some of the rules of composition, because a lot of them take what I call mom photographs. My mother has a bulletin board, and almost every photograph on her bulletin board looks precisely the same. it involves one of two situations. It's either a graduation photo where it's a head and shoulder shot, which is fine, or it's a group of people standing side by side, but like a group of sardines, and they're all centered in the picture. They're all standing static. There's no movement. There's nothing interesting in the picture unless you know the individuals. And I also see people sometimes taking pictures of landscapes with no thought toward composition whatsoever, simply trying to open the window of their vehicle, stick their camera outside, take the picture, and then go post it on Facebook.
Normally an iPhone, so you can post it right there.
Correct.
Well, you do have an SLR camera with a lens that gives you some creative flexibility. But I think a lot of what you're talking about can be done with a point and shoot or an iPhone. But when you talk about composition, what do you mean exactly? And maybe you can tie this into an example, like, let's say it's Tug of War, downtown Dillingham, Beaver Roundup.
When I was shooting Tug of War, and I'll preface this by saying that I've shot a lot of sports because I used to be a photojournalist, and I'm trying to get rid of all the distracting elements in the photo. I noticed a lot of people standing back, and I understand their reticence to get up close and take pictures, but by standing back, they include a lot of things that don't matter to the photograph. And I just got in there next to the guys pulling on the rope. Really key to making sports photography work is expressions. You've got to get people's expressions. You've got to get their eyes. There are some exceptions that look great without that, but you want expressions in your sports photography if you can possibly get it. It makes it so much more interesting.
How about shooting the Subway Footlong Challenge? One of my reporters was there, and we don't want to mention Matt's name and embarrass him, but your photos were excellent. I would say they were better. What's the trick there?
Where you were made every bit of difference. Many people were there with their camera phones shooting from about eye level. Every contestant was seated. That meant the contestant's face was down below them, so many people were shooting the tops of people's heads. I got down, put one knee on the ground so that I could shoot up and get faces.
All right, well, let's talk about the ordinary and the familiar subject material you excel at capturing. Now, we're blessed to have scenery and wildlife here that any dummy could take good photos of, but you turn your focus elsewhere, and it works. You've been sauntering around town the last few weeks, taking pictures of things that most people around here have probably seen most every day of their life, but you've turned them into a bit of art, and you're finding something beautiful in the overlooked or the ugly or the ordinary. What's your technique here? What gives?
There's not an example.
There's
not an easy answer to that. I've taken pictures of the post office or pictures of the city dock and the seawall, and a lot of it has to do with finding the right lighting or finding the right texture or finding the right foreground. I spend a lot of time looking, and the more you take pictures, the more you start to see things. I'm constantly looking for lines and shapes and colors that please me that I think I can do something with. And it's important for people to realize that for every really good picture that I put on Facebook, there's dozens of pictures that I don't show anybody because they're crap.
Huh. Yes, well, same as in radio. Okay, if somebody doesn't know what an f-stop is or exposure, or they don't have a 200-millimeter lens, Clark Fair's tips to grabbing a few better photos, whether they're point and shooting or what?
Well, I would say that there isn't anything really more important than controlling the light. It's the most crucial aspect of photography. With no light, you got no picture. And then, honestly, we all can benefit from the rules of composition. So learn them, try them, and then after you get good at them, break the rules, because you don't have to follow the rules all the time. That's boring.
This weekend you'll have students, and you're going to put them on some assignments, and you're going to take them to some places they've probably seen many times. How do you challenge them to get better photographs out there along Squaw Creek or somewhere?
It would be the same thing if I were teaching a writing course and I gave them the elements of composition or what I thought would make for good fiction writing, and then said, I want you to write about this, and it was something that they were all already familiar with and thought maybe would be boring. And I said, I might say, don't let it be boring. Find a new way. We all have individual voices, so our writing shouldn't sound exactly the same. We all have individual ways of viewing the world, so our photography shouldn't look the same. Even if we take six or seven of us and we all stand around the same boat or the same building or the same old tractor or whatever it happens to be, we all see it differently, and our pictures should reflect the differences that are inside of us.
Clark Fair, thank you so much.
Pleasure being here, Dave.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with a mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art.
That's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond, our weekly news magazine on KDLG. Send us your feedback and ideas, your own photos, essays, thoughts, or songs to news@kdlg.org or to me at dave@kdlg.org. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Please enjoy the basketball this weekend. Keep an eye on this weather, and we hope to see you back here next week.
Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art, Mona Lisa?